Soccer fans, gear up at Soccer 90, DFW's largest in-store collection. Real Madrid, Man U, Juventus, FC Dallas, and a whole lot more. Soccer 90 at Toyota Stadium, next door to the National Soccer Hall of Fame in Frisco, or soccer90.com. Soccer 90, love it, live it, wear it.
This is Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310 The Ticket. Broadcasting live from the TXU Energy Mothership, KTCK AM Dallas-Fort Worth, KTCK FM Flower Mound, a Cumulus Media station. It's time for the Kick Around, the Ticket's weekly show all about soccer. 2 hours of HSOs on the clubs, leagues, and tournaments of the world's game. It doesn't matter if you're new to the sport, don't worry. This is the Ticket. We're just kicking it around. Now, here's two guys that still dream about having cool soccer hair. Andy Swift and Peter Welpton.
By Damari Gray, the Gladys Street end right behind this Everton side. Drawing at the moment. Gray sends it in, brilliant ball!
Hi-de-ho, P1s, and welcome to today's Kick Around, Saturdays 2 to 4 here on the Sport Radio, 96.7 and 1310, The Ticket, where you, the good P1, sits around, talks some soccer and all that implies. Hi, don't forget you can find us on our website, thekickaround.com. Howdy, it's me, Peter. And alongside me today in this broadcasting balloon known as The Ticket, playing the part of Andy Swift is the man whose spacing between all of his letters is always on point. The amazing and terrific Tyler Kern.
Thank you, Peter. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's a special treat for me because I'm a big Tyler Kern fan, always have been. But I think today officially is the very first time I have done a soccer talking show exclusively with you.
It's amazing. We've been in like these coexisting parallel worlds for the last like 8 years.
Many years.
And just
never
somehow
happened.
Haven't done it.
No. I never got invited in the old ESPN Soccer Today show.
We weren't allowed to
cross.
Yeah, to cross-pollinate.
Yeah.
Back in the
cross
day.
Cross swords, as they say back in the day.
Cross streams.
When we were rival soccer talking shows in Dallas-Fort Worth.
It was a real Sharks and Jets situation. Yeah. We'd meet out in the parking garage and snap.
I don't think you'll be offended in me saying I'm not disappointed we won that battle. But anyway.
I'm hurt.
Man, so much to do today. Now, Andy has real life stuff because the U.S. Soccer Hall of Fame induction ceremony stuff is happening up in Frisco today, minus Hope Solo. And Clint Dempsey, Linda Hamilton. No, not that Linda Hamilton. She's been on the show, but not, well, anyway. A whole bunch of people, soccer greats, are getting inducted into the Hall of Fame today. And because Andy is like the center of that universe, he has obligations. And on a day like today, the Kick Around gets put in the sock drawer, the Andy Swift sock drawer.
Upper crust Andy.
So that means you get to be here today.
And I am hyped to be here. Do I have to be a Liverpool fan today because I'm filling
no.
in for Andy? Okay.
Good Lord, no.
Okay.
Please don't do
I
that.
I just wasn't sure.
Just relieve me from that. Suffrage.
Give you a break.
Yes, for one 2 hour period, please.
I'll give you sober Liverpool analysis today rather than pie in the sky.
Some sort of weird math thing you're going to tell me about.
I'm not going to go into Liverpool math.
All right. Now, today we do have so much to talk about, including promotion relegation updates across the Premier League. Tyler will provide us some insight on what's happening over in the Bundesliga. There's stuff going on. The U.S. men's national team roster was announced yesterday. That means there are actual games coming up, four of them to be exact, so we'll talk about that. There was also a rather epic decision that happened this week in the world of our sport. It's called the equal pay decision. Men and women making the same amount of money for doing the same thing. A unique concept, I know, but we'll talk about that. And because it is now just nigh around the corner, I think it's a good time for us to catch everybody up on what's about to happen with the World Cup in Qatar in 2022, and specifically how that impacts this specific show. So we'll talk all about that here over the course of the next 2 hours on the Kick Around. But to start, Tyler, tomorrow is the day. It's Championship Sunday. Warm up your peacock. Get it going, because there are many, many games all to be watched at exactly the same time. Which one out of all of the games are you most excited to see, my friend?
I mean, it's the low-hanging fruit, right? But I think you got to go with Steven Gerrard and Aston Villa taking on Manchester City, right? Because there's something so poetic about it. Gerrard, being the Liverpool legend, could never actually deliver a title to Liverpool as a player, but could he do it as a manager, Peter?
Could he help? And don't forget,
so much poetic.
There's a weird Jack Grealish bent in that story, too, because now he's facing his old former club after kind of goofing off with City this year.
It's true. Now, almost no team in the Premier League has had a worse record on the road than Aston Villa this year. So to go to the Etihad and take any kind of points off of Manchester City is such a tall ask, but that's the one I think.
There's
I'm
even
the
a
most.
Coutinho aspect to this, too, because he's a former Liverpool guy.
Yeah.
He probably wants to see if he can throw in a little charm in there, see if he can mess up the situation. So that game will be broadcast on USA. So that's main channel NBC.
Yeah.
At 10 a.m. And so what, as they have every year for the last many years, is they roll, because all the games are being played at the same time, NBC is going to spread them out across multiple broadcast channels, and then they will throw the rest of them on Peacock. And the other extra reason to watch it on Peacock is they are doing a Goal Rush wraparound show tomorrow.
Oh, that's fun.
Yes. So if you've never enjoyed Championship Sunday in wraparound style, I cannot recommend it more highly. Now, this year there's not as many decisive, what may happen or how it ends may change the course of everybody's fate kind of games. But there are three or four of them that are pretty important. And to be able to watch it in a wraparound show is pretty cool. And that will be on Peacock tomorrow.
I think there are very few games that don't hold any kind of significance, right? Like,
I guess it depends on what you consider to be significant.
Arsenal-Everton matters to Arsenal.
Yes.
You know.
Yep.
Let's see. Burnley-Newcastle matters to Burnley. Brentford-Leeds matters to Leeds. Tottenham-Norwich matters to Tottenham. And then Liverpool-Wolves and Manchester City-Aston Villa. So that's the majority of games. You only have like Chelsea-Watford, not much to play for there. Leicester City-Southampton, not much to play for there. And Brighton-West Ham. Crystal Palace-Man U.
So let's carve this up over the next two segments into two parts. Let's talk about the top competitions.
Let's do it.
First off, City, Liverpool. Mm-hmm. I think the general consensus is this is, obviously it's City's to lose, and the odds of them goofing this up by losing points at home against Aston Villa seems completely impossible.
It does. Is there a weirder team than Manchester City who just feels so inevitable in the league and so just prone to disaster in the Champions League? The dichotomy, the contrast there is so strange to me, in that like you feel like Manchester City in the league is imperious. Like, who stops them?
And then Liverpool has to play Wolves, and, you know, that feels like a relatively easy... As a person that is not a Liverpool fan, it will not go lost on me that they're probably their main desire, which is to win the league, and that Manchester City, my other team's nemesis, desire to win Champions League. Neither one of those is going to come true again. And one of them is going to, again, for the second time, lose out on their dream prize by a single point. Is pretty awesome. So those two games will be interesting to watch just because of that thing, but I think we all have a sense of how that's going to play out. It would be a pretty epic scenario for Liverpool to leap City at this point. And if it was to happen, it would be fun to watch.
Yeah.
It would be great to watch.
It would be great television.
I was listening to the podcast when you sat in last week for me. Thank you, by the way, for doing that. And you made a comment about Erling Haaland signing with City.
Right.
And you asked some questions about, well, is that really the automatic success story everybody thinks it is? And I thought it was interesting that subsequent to you making the comment on the podcast, there was not a lack of analysis across the soccer media about why the argument could be made that that is an odd fit.
Yeah. Stylistically, it doesn't make a ton of sense to me. And we saw a lot of people break it down. John Mueller on The Athletic is the one that I read and kind of put the most stock in. But stylistically, it's a weird fit just because of how Manchester City plays, how people tend to bunker in on them, and what Erling Haaland does best is make those runs in behind and pound in goals from there. And so to me, it's weird stylistically. I'll be interested to see how it works, but it wouldn't shock me if there are some growing pains next year.
It does make me wonder if what we are not prepared to see is what will happen Because when you add in the Jack Grealish component to this, because there's a part of Jack Grealish's game which lends itself to Haaland's typical kind of game, which is maybe City's about to make kind of change how they play based on these new sets of players they have.
That's an interesting perspective, and it could also be that Pep Guardiola wants an alternate way to play in you know, competitions like the Champions League.
Well,
he knows he can stomp his way through the Premier League pretty easily, even if they're not playing well, even if they're not clicking on all cylinders. But it's in the Champions League where they struggle, so maybe they play a little bit differently.
So what if in the Premier League you've got a team that's really good at breaking down bunker defenses?
Exactly.
And in the Champions League you've got a transition counterattacking powerhouse when you play teams that are willing to come at you.
Yeah, like if Bayern Munich is going to play against you in the Champions League and they're going to put their center backs on the halfway line for the entire game, then all of a sudden you've got one of the fastest players in the world who, by the way, also happens to be built like a freight train.
It wouldn't surprise me to see Erling Haaland have a really good Champions League season next year and not a great Premier League season.
That would actually make sense. That would make a ton of sense to me, given the stylistic
differences. Because if you just look at the Grealish situation, Grealish was playing amazing for Aston Villa, went to City and has really sputtered this year, actually cost them way more money to get Jack Grealish, at least in a transfer fee, than it did Haaland.
Yeah.
Haaland's never played in the Premier League.
No.
And there's that, as John Mueller in his article wrote, he called it the Bundesliga tax, which I think is a great way of talking about, hey, it may be easier to do things in the Bundesliga, so when you come over, some of that gets chopped off.
Right, and part of Manchester City's defensive brilliance has been their ability to keep possession, and part of that is they have an extra midfielder on the field as a striker, basically, so they can just keep possession, pass it around. That is not something Erling Haaland is great at. He does not play well with the ball at his feet and moving it. He wants to one-touch, lay it off to somebody, and then run in behind the defense, kind of peel off button hook behind the center backs after that one touch. And so for him to kind of become an intricate part of this Manchester City machine where he's passing it and moving and passing and moving, it's going to take a big evolution for a guy. And granted, he's still 21. He's going to figure it out probably, but he's not Harry Kane. He's not Robert Lewandowski in that kind of way where he's comfortable getting passes into his feet and connecting play.
Oh, I don't care. I'm dying to see him play in the Premier League, and we're going to get that next season. So lots of that to come. Also of importance tomorrow is obviously probably the second most critical one, which is the race for fourth, the Fruitcake Cup, which doesn't feel very fruitcakey anymore because Tottenham's really been working hard to get there. And all they have to do is draw Norwich. They just got to get a point from the Canaries and they're safe. So Arsenal, now, of course, because Everton got their salvation midweek and that fantastic game, we'll talk about more about that here in a little bit. The Arsenal-Everton game isn't as important.
Right.
And it doesn't end up deciding both components, the fourth place and the relegation, but that's okay. It will still be fun, but as we know, Tottenham just getting a point against Norwich will give them fourth place. Arsenal will probably end up in fifth. And then the last at the top of the half of the table set of matches that I do think have some importance is Manchester City having to go to Crystal Palace and West Ham hosting Brighton, because that is the determiner between who plays Europa League and who has to travel to Iceland, Azerbaijan, the Faroe Islands, or wherever to play games in the European Conference League.
Ooh.
Now, your Union Berlin,
yes,
in the Bundesliga, is in the Conference League, right? Didn't they qualify for...
Oh, no, I believe Europa League.
Oh, did they? All right, so which German team is going to end up in Conference League?
I believe it was Cologne ended up in a playoff spot for Europa Conference League, and Union Berlin and Freiburg ended up in Europa League.
So, what about Conference League? Because I'm trying to...
I believe Cologne is Conference League.
All right, so that means Manchester United would be playing games like that.
And going to Bodø/Glimt, Lars's Bodø/Glimt up there in Norway.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Trips to Norway, trips to all sorts of just weird, bizarre, little-known champions of other small European leagues.
Erik ten Hag in his first year taking the club to Norway.
Just imagine. Just think of all the trips that Jose Mourinho had to make with Roma this year.
Yeah.
Now apply that to Manchester United and Erik ten Hag in his debut season.
And if Cristiano Ronaldo is there, what's his attitude going to be to playing Bodø/Glimt on a Thursday night?
By the way,
on
the
a
word,
frozen pitch.
Yeah. The word is that he's not playing tomorrow. He has a hip injury and will not play against Crystal Palace.
Huh. He's already on the Amalfi Coast.
Yeah.
He saw the Sorois pictures and said, I want to go there.
I want to go to there. Absolutely. So that's kind of the slate of the games at the top of the table. When we come back, we'll look at the relegation situation. We'll talk more about Everton and the updating news that some of the teams have filed a complaint about Everton. And when we come back, I need to tell everybody a story about our friend Lars. You don't want to miss this. Ooh. It's next on the Kick Around. We will talk about the U.S. men's national team roster in upcoming games here in a second. But first, here on the Kick Around, by the way, Tyler Curran sitting in for my buddy Andy, who's very busy doing soccer business stuff today.
Hanging out with the beautiful people.
I have an official Kick Around related announcement. And this one is, this one hurts, literally, on both ways.
Yeah.
Because last night, now, typically this would be the time that we would have Lars Sivertsen on the show, who is our Norwegian friend that lives in London. He's a noted soccer journalist over there, great guy, on the show on the regular. But I got a WhatsApp message from him late yesterday afternoon telling me he could not come on the show today because he was in the hospital.
COVID?
No.
Oh.
Way worse, my friend.
Worse than COVID.
Yes. Poor Lars fell in his house and broke his left leg. He broke both bones, his tibia and fibia, of his left leg in the right above his ankle, and broke a third bone in his ankle. And here's the hardest part to take in this. Lars was home by himself with his cell phone upstairs, with his crumpled body at the bottom of the stairs.
Oh, no.
And he had to drag himself across the living room floor to the front door so that he could scream loudly enough that somebody could come help him and call the ambulance. And it turned out to be a postman.
Good God, Lars.
And he also tells a rather descriptive and gruesome story about the actual breaking of the leg. Because he felt and heard all of it. So as we speak, Lars is in a London-based hospital having pins, multiple pins and rods put in his leg to put it all back together again. And so our love and best wishes and everything to our buddy Lars, who's got a bit of a road in front of him in terms of recovery.
What are the chances we can get him to write like a stream of consciousness blog while he's on painkillers watching the final day of the Premier League season?
Balls.
Yeah, absolutely.
I told him if he could get a VPN that could spoof an American IP, I'd give him my Peacock login so that he, because they literally are only getting access to like four of the games tomorrow.
Right.
So like, in London.
We're about to talk about Everton, right? That Everton Crystal Palace game wasn't broadcast in the UK.
Right. No, it's ridiculous how limited it is over there.
And wild how spoiled we are.
So do me a favor, P1s, if you have a Twitter account. We just tweeted out the picture of Lars's leg that he sent me last night, and it's temporary cast in the hospital bed. Please reply to Lars and tell him how much you love him and send him your best wishes. That would mean a lot to me, and I'm sure it would definitely mean a lot to Lars, who, by the way, on occasion, does run into people over in Europe who was like, I've heard you on the Kick Around on the Ticket.
Wow.
Isn't that cool?
That's really cool.
It does happen. All right, we were talking about tomorrow, Sunday, 10 a.m., all of the Premier League games are being played at the same time. We talked about the games at the top of the table. It's a little bit of a letdown, frankly, Sam, that Everton got the win against Crystal Palace,
albeit
amazing of ways, coming down from 2-0 to win 3-2. What a game that was, and what scenes it was with the pitch invasion. All of that was fantastic to watch, but it also means that the Arsenal-Everton game will not be a deciding factor for both fourth place and relegation, as Everton is now safe. So the game to watch out for are the two games, which is obviously Burnley's game and Leeds game. Burnley is playing against Newcastle, and Leeds has to travel to Brentford. Now, Newcastle and Brentford, I do think, have something to play for here, which is the value of their final place. Maybe Brentford, only because of the statement it would make, if they were to get points and win that game, the idea that Brentford would get promoted and not only stay in the Premier League, but end up top 10 would be an unbelievable result to a fantastic season.
Incredible achievement, and potentially maybe the last time that Christian Eriksen is playing for Brentford.
Yep,
and so
that's true.
Want to go out on a high note. And they're a team that hasn't had much to play for throughout like this entire final month, but they've just been rampaging
well,
through people.
When you add Christian Eriksen to your team, as we talked about on this show, that only can mean good things. You know, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Their average points per game pre and post adding Christian Eriksen is like double. It's pretty crazy.
Amazing what it does to have one world-class player just kind of dropped into the middle of an otherwise, like, you know, fun to watch but ordinary Premier League team.
Now, there is some breaking news. This morning, it came out that Burnley and Leeds have filed a letter with the Premier League asking them for an independent investigation into Everton and whether or not they have been adhering to the Premier League's financial rules. Because according to the records, and by the way, on our Twitter account, at the Kickaround, there's a Twitter account called the Swiss Ramble. And if you follow it, you will get these amazing long threads of financial breakdown, which if you're into that thing is like Nirvana. But they did one today on Everton, and the long and short of it is there's an argument to be made that Everton is at the very least worth questioning how in the world they justify losing £371 million over the course of the last 3 years when, according to the rule, you're only allowed to lose what it equates to about a little over £100 million over the last 3 years and not suffer some sort of penalty, which, of course, Leeds and Burnley want to be a loss of points, which would help sustain one of those two clubs and push Everton down into the relegation zone.
That's fascinating. Fascinating to me. A, it shows how completely mismanaged Everton have been over the last several years, right? And then, on the other hand, if you stay up because of a technicality like that, do you feel better? I suppose that in the end, you're still in the Premier League, so you don't really care how it happens.
How about this? The amount of money Everton has lost is like £120 million more pounds than the next team, which is Chelsea, which had a Russian oligarch, you know, kind of help funding them. It's the difference between 371 and like 225 or something. It's
goodness
ridiculous.
Gracious.
It's so that's just a side story to keep an eye on. Just watch the games. They should be fun to watch. Jesse Marsh trying to save Leeds. I think the general consensus is that they have the tougher road to hoe, and Jesse may end up doing what I was worried about, which is getting relegated with Leeds. Now, a couple other things to talk about. If you didn't watch today, great scenes at Wembley, and this is one of the things that makes my heart grow two sizes bigger because I love this. The great Sunderland will play in the championship next year as they got promoted today by winning the League One playoff over Wickham today, 2-0. And if you've listened to the Kick Around for any amount of time, you know that I think I'm speaking for Andy. Our favorite all-time soccer documentary series is Sunderland Till I Die, which has been on Netflix. There's two seasons of it. It's also one of the most depressing sports things you could ever watch. You've watched it, right?
I've watched it. I loved it.
It's so good because it just talks, it really clarifies for an American what these clubs mean to these neighborhoods and these communities in ways that I just don't think exist here in our country.
Yeah.
And I really hope now that Sunderland and its fans get the third season. It is now due for a happy ending because it was so great to see them win today. And they were really the dominant team. They totally deserved to win. They had so many people there, and so they'll be back in the championship next year.
It'll be fantastic, right? That documentary really hit at just the perfect time because it got two consecutive seasons of relegation.
Of just
and then,
heartbreak.
Just absolute heartbreak.
Yes.
Could not feel worse for those people. You got to know kind of backroom staff and the lunch lady there with the club who'd been there for like 30 years or whatever. Like, the documentary is fantastic. Can't recommend it enough, but it's what makes you love seeing something like
that
we saw today.
Yeah, there was a video that got tweeted out last night or this morning of a Sunderland father. He's got like an 8-year-old son. Have you seen this video?
No, I haven't.
So he's told his son, sorry, I can't get tickets to go to Wembley, and we're going to have to watch it on TV. And the kid's brokenhearted. In the video, the dad surprises him with tickets to go to Wembley. And the kid breaks down, and it's all, you know, It's just awesome. It's so, so good. The other note about that game at Wickham, which is something to take note of because this is a really cool side story. It's the final game of Akinfenwa,
yeah,
who is the giant hulk of a human being who is 40 years old and was playing in his very last game. By the way, he's the most popular player on FIFA, the video game,
yep,
because he's the only guy in the game that I think has like 99 or 100 strength. And so he can just body everybody up. And he's a cool story. There's a great, kind of a great tell-all about him in The Guardian today. It was his last game. He's 40, but he came on late. You could tell why he's a late sub because he doesn't run very much, and he's just a massive human
being.
He's
listed at 6'1", 224. I think he's more like 240.
Yeah.
He looks like an NFL linebacker.
He has tree trunks for arms.
Yes.
And in his day, for his size, the dude could score some amazing goals. He's essentially played his entire career in League One, League Two,
mm-hmm,
and he's just kind of a mythical legend in the sport. Klopp sent him a video when the last team he played for got promoted, and it's a great story. So unfortunately for him, they lost today, and he lost his final game as a professional player, but that was a lot of fun. All right, when we come back, we will get into the U.S. men's national team. Greg has done his roster for these games coming up, and we'll discuss all of it next here on The Kick Around. I forgot to mention the championship playoff final, the last spot to get promoted into the Premier League, will happen also tomorrow, 10:30 tomorrow morning on ESPN+, Nottingham Forest and Huddersfield Town will play a one-off at Wembley for their place. And I do want to send my deepest condolences to show friend Dan Crook,
yeah,
whose Luton Town Hatters lost in the playoffs.
I also said on the show last week, I don't know if you remember this, but I said that if Luton won and got promoted to the Premier League, that I would adopt them as my Premier League team.
Man, every time I get to this point of the season and I watch championship playoff,
yeah,
matches, I say to myself, why am I not watching more of the championship season? Because it is so entertaining.
Yeah.
And I always ask myself this question, and I make myself my promise that I'm going to, and then I don't do it for some stupid reason. So somebody needs to hold me to that for next year.
You should need to adopt a, you know, do a wheel of championship teams, adopt a championship team, and then just dive in and go.
Yes. Well, after tomorrow, we will be able to officially update the Supreme Wheel of Allegiance.
That's a good point.
For all those leagues,
yeah,
for next season, so people can spin and pick that up. All right. We do now need to dive into the U.S. men's national team because we are back to those things. The international break is up. And whether you know it or not, in the span of just a couple of weeks, the men's national team is going to play not one, but four matches, two of which are friendlies and two of which, so weird, so unstable, the Nations League returns.
Yeah.
So on the 1st, they play Morocco in Cincinnati, friendly. And then on the 5th, they play Uruguay in Kansas City, friendly. And then on the 10th, they play Grenada in Austin, in a Nations League game. And then the last one is they travel down to El Salvador to play El Salvador in a nothing, the other group game for Nations League. But here's the most wheels-off part of this. So they will have played the first part of their group games. Tyler Kern, who, by the way, is sitting in for Andy, do you know when they play the next set of games in the Nations League?
I don't, but it can't be until after the World Cup, right?
March 2023.
What the heck? Like, it's a different team. It's not even the same team. At that
I know.
Point.
It's the dumbest thing, which, you know, I mean, the Nations League was created to help lower, smaller countries,
yeah,
get regular games, and I guess that's the way to look at it and not really take them too seriously. But that is so weird that more than almost a full year apart between games in a tournament is,
yeah,
just so stupid.
I'm sitting here looking at the announced scheduled matches for the U.S. men's national team, and it's these four games, and then, oh, you look, and the next match that is on the calendar is November 21st.
Yeah, the World Cup.
Because it's the World Cup.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But that emphasizes the importance of this kind of camp, right? Like being able to call in players and get a look at some guys that maybe you didn't rely on for World Cup qualifying, but might be pieces that you could bring in for the World Cup should you need them.
Yes. There will be more friendlies between now and November on that first game against whoever it is ends up in that group with the U.S.
Right.
and the other teams. But, Tyler Kern, since you're here today, with Berhalter's announcement yesterday of the roster, is there, I'm going to ask you this question.
Okay.
Is there a particular player you're most excited to have seen been added to the roster?
I'm going to say it's Cameron Carter-Vickers, which center back is not an exciting position, right? But Miles Robinson busted up his Achilles a couple weeks ago playing for Atlanta. He was a surefire, nailed-on starter, him and Walker Zimmerman at the back. And so now you've got to find a replacement for a guy that you were pretty sure was going to be there and be one of your stalwarts along the back line. Cameron Carter-Vickers on the Scotland Team of the Year playing for Celtic this year, started almost all of their games. We need a center back now. He's called into this roster. Random guy to point out, I know, but it's Cameron Carter-Vickers.
I was convinced you were going to say one of two. I thought you were going to say Joe Scally or Malik Tillman, who is the surprise addition, who announced his made the announcement yesterday that he has decided not to play for Germany, despite being a Bayern Munich 2 player, but will play for the United States. I know nothing about this man. I've never heard of him before yesterday.
Nobody does, because everyone thought, okay, if he gets called in, he'll get called in as a striker. And then he gets called in as a midfielder. And then yesterday during Berhalter's press conference, he said, yeah, I see him as more of an attacking midfielder with this team than as a forward. And so everyone who thought they knew something about this kid immediately found out that they did not actually know anything about him. And it's just, I don't want to be... I realize this is part of being a U.S. fan, right? Is that you become so prisoner of the moment that Malik Tillman, the guy that none of us knew, you know, all that much about,
we're
going to
win the World Cup.
Yeah, he's going to be the
Europeans
new,
coming to play for us.
He's the new Julian Green. You know, he's the new whoever
Thomas
the heck,
Dooley.
Thomas Dooley. He's the new Gedeon Zalalem. Do you remember that craze?
Oh yes.
Like, there's always that guy that's out there that's going to be but he plays for Bayern Munich, sort of thing. And I'm just not going to be prisoner of the moment to that extent right here. I'm excited. It's great he's on the roster, but I don't know that he'll actually see the field in these games.
Well, we also got the surprising news that Gabriel Solonia, who is the goalkeeper for the Fire, young guy,
18,
and while he's not in the best of form currently, he's had some pretty poor performances for the Fire in the last month or so.
Yeah.
And in fact, it was even stated by Berhalter, that's why he was not added to this particular roster. But in a bit of a surprise, because he did get a call-up to his other nation that he has as an option, which is Poland.
Mm-hmm.
Poland has been chasing him hard. He kind of surprised everyone. I was surprised to find out that he has announced that he will play for the United States.
I was surprised by that as well. I honestly didn't know what to expect after he accepted the call-up to Poland, right?
And
for their Nations League games.
Is he going to go play? I
don't actually know. Like, do you go just hang out with Robert Lewandowski for a few weeks and then...
And then because you...
And then all right, peace out. This was cool, but I'm going to go play for the U.S. Now, I honestly don't know what you do in that situation, but good on... I mean, he's 18. He appears to be really talented. Some of the biggest clubs in the world want him, so okay.
Jordi Mihailović, who's been playing very well for Montreal, got a call-up for the first time. Haji Wright, who has been scoring goals for fun in Turkey, got a call-up.
9 goals in his last 9 games.
My most exciting name, which is going to seem weird...
Go.
Weston McKennie.
Happy to see him healthy.
Back and healthy. He probably won't play a ton in these games, but just to see Weston back, hopefully as captain of this team, his rightful spot. But my next question for you, Tyler Kern.
Yes.
Do you have an outrage moment? Is there somebody not on the roster that just made your blood boil and insist that Greg only got this job because his brother was running the Federation kind of angst?
You know my levels of anger so well. Not really, but I did think Paxton Pomykal should and would be on this roster.
Really?
And he's not. Yeah. I thought he would. Look, if Weston McKennie were to get hurt, you know, or Yunus Musah, at this point, I'm ready to say one of Tyler Adams or Weston McKennie will not be available for all 3 group games the World Cup. Doesn't that feel inevitable?
They got Kellen Acosta.
You've got Kellen Acosta. They like Luca Della Torre, who's Heracles in the Eredivisie, got relegated today. So who knows where he will be next season. They like Yunus Musah a lot, but I just kind of thought maybe a little bit more depth at that eight position, and I think Paxton plays that role.
I like to pretend that I'm the president of the Paxton Pomacall non-family fan club.
So you don't think so?
Paxton has had a really solid season for Dallas, but I still am really worried about his long-term health and fragility. When I was at the last
Fragile.
When I was at the last Dallas game, I was lucky enough to sit in the front row with some friends of mine that has season tickets on the east side. And there was a moment in the game against Seattle, which, by the way, he had such a good game against Seattle.
He did.
He was battling like a bull. And there was a moment in the game where he and another guy were battling for a ball, and they both tumbled, and I was literally 25 yards away when Paxton got up and immediately grabbed his groin and muttered a cuss word out loud, and they had to come over and give him a look, and I thought, oh, man, I hope I just didn't watch that happen again. He ended up playing the rest of the game, and he's been solid. I worry that the miles, that he's just a little too, he needs a little bit more time before you start adding on national team miles.
You're probably right. I watched that. It was against Seattle, right, where he has his back to the midfield line, right? Receives a ball.
Such a good pass.
And just like immediately sprays a 35, 40-yard ball down the right side for, I believe it was O'Brien that ran onto it.
He moves the ball 10 yards north, and he sees a blind pass chipped 30 yards to his right.
Yeah.
And it's so perfectly placed. He's such a good player.
I love Weston McKennie. I think Pomacall does things that no other midfielder on the U.S. really does. And so that, to me, is a missing piece. Right?
I want him to be there, but he's young. He's got time. I just want to make sure that he's fully healthy.
Anybody you're outraged about?
Not really outraged about.
Ricardo Pepi?
No, I think Ricardo needs... By the way, Ricardo's in town, and we reached out to his agent and tried... I was willing to literally give Pepi the entire second hour of the show. But they feel like Ricardo's not ready for media yet, so they asked if they could wait till later in the year, and I was like, all right. Ricardo needs a little bit of time off. I think he needs to figure out, get his head right with ball, and be prepared for the next Bundesliga season, since they did not get relegated.
Right.
John Brooks' situation I'm very confused by.
Very confused.
Because he's improved his club game. He said nothing but exactly the things you want to hear out of a guy that lost his place on the team, and talking about pride and American this, and just makes you want to get a bald eagle tattoo, and it's all great. And then he doesn't get another call up, and you're thinking that he did something to piss Berhalter off. But then yesterday Berhalter goes, no, please believe me, there is no intention to, he's not lost it forever. And I'm like, well, then why wouldn't you let him complain now? Especially when you need another center back.
Right, right. There's questions there. I have
something
no
happened.
Idea.
Something, and it must be worse than the Weston McKennie deal, right? Because remember, Weston got like suspended for the team for letting his girlfriend come over from some nookie time in the middle of a tournament and broke COVID rules. What did John Brooks do?
I have no idea. You're right, though. Like, he had to have done something, or the other option is, and other people have talked a little bit about this, or he just doesn't stylistically fit with where the team is right now, that they put two more mobile center backs back there and immediately improved in World Cup qualifying defensively. He is prone to lapses. He is prone to getting caught in space and beaten.
But he's a better passer.
It's true.
Better with his...
Much, much better passer. Yeah. It appears to be the kind of player that Berhalter should like, but he does not. So it leaves open that possibility that, he just must have done something to make Berhalter angry or something along those lines.
And also included on the roster, for those of you listening to this radio program in the North Texas area, Jesus Ferreira and Paul Areola, a.k.a. Pauly Nips, were both called up to the team. So there is a Dallas repping going on. Jesus in fantastic form. I'm very excited to see him get more time with the national team.
I think he gets a butt ton of minutes in these four games, because there's only two strikers that got called up, he and Haji Wright. So I think this is a huge opportunity for him to really stamp his authority on a place as the starting number nine heading towards the World Cup.
We've talked about this a lot here. Buzz Carrick has talked a lot about it on his podcast and in his website, thirddegree.net. Do not let it go forgotten that Jesus Ferreira is playing in exactly the same system and position and tactical formations, all of that, for Dallas as he will be for the U.S. men's national team.
That's exactly right.
It's exactly the same, and there's so much value in that.
It feels like everybody else outside of Jesus Ferreira, it's all just who has the hot hand at the moment. So right now it's Haji Wright. It was Ricardo Pepi. It has been other players. Mm-hmm. It has been Jordan Pefok in the past. All these different guys. But that is only true. What you just said is only true of Jesus Ferreira, which means Paul Arriola as well, but as a striker.
Oh, as a striker.
As a striker. There are all these guys vying for that number nine role, but only Jesus Ferreira is playing in the system in the exact way Berhalter wants to play, and not to mention leading the Golden Boot race in Major League Soccer.
And by the way, if you haven't been paying attention, Jesus is growing out some of the most amazing hair in soccer.
Oh, it's a mane.
It's kind of almost like, kind of a mullet?
It's like the Mohawk mullet, but it's curly, right?
Yes, it's super thick and it's wide, so it's like he shaves just a little part of the sides.
It's kind of Jossy Zardes-esque, except not blonde.
Right, and much thicker.
Yeah.
You just go in there and you could like hide pencils and stuff in there.
Yeah.
So it's not like a fro, but it kind of is.
It's glorious.
It is fantastic. I hope he continues to grow it all the way to the
envy.
World Cup.
Do you have hair envy?
Look at me. How could I not have hair envy?
Oh, sorry.
I have hair envy of you. All right. So the first game is on the 1st against Morocco, and then that'll end up a 4-game cycle in Salvador against El Salvador.
Are you going to go to the game 14th. In Austin? Against Granada?
No, I'm not. Mm-mm.
Be kind of fun.
It would be fun.
I hadn't really thought of it.
I hadn't thought of it either until just now. Yeah.
Hmm.
If you're getting tickets and you'd like to invite me, yes, we can go.
The kick around road trip.
That's a great idea. What day is the 10th?
I don't know.
Of the week is the 10th.
Let me pull up my mobile.
Look it up on your phone.
It's a Friday.
Yeah, why don't you just look
Friday.
It up on your phone?
Mm. All right, there's my homage to Danny right there.
Yeah. R.I.P.
It's a Friday?
All right.
All right. Kick around road trip, maybe. We'll talk to, maybe Andy can pull some of those important soccer business strings that he has.
Yeah, if you're going to miss shows for important business, you may as well get us some tickets.
All right, now there was the big equal pay announcement. We'll get into that here in a little bit, but when we get back, we're going to put Tyler to work and talk a little Bundesliga next on the Kick Around. All right, welcome back to the Kick Around, Saturdays 2 to 4 here on the Ticket. I'm Peter, sitting in for Andy, playing the part of Andy Swift today, is the good Tyler Kern. Thanks again for sitting in. I hope you're enjoying doing soccer talking on a Saturday.
Man, I'm loving it. I'm loving it.
It is now time to utilize Tyler for what he normally does for us, which is act as our professional German Bundesliga correspondent in all things Bundesliga. Tyler?
Yeah.
What about the Bundesliga today should we know other than the fact that Dortmund continues to shed people?
Dortmund is shedding people left and right. So that is really fascinating, actually. Borussia Dortmund fired their coach, Marco Rosa. Actually, mutual parting of ways. You know, the typical mutual parting of ways. But that happened earlier this week. He's only been there a year. This was his first season in charge. But Dortmund has brought in a new sporting director, a former player for Borussia Dortmund, Sebastian Kehl, mm-hmm. is taking over in their front office. And so, huge overhaul going on at Dortmund. Obviously, losing Erling Haaland meant that they were going to have to revamp and revitalize that team in the first place. But I think they're actually going about it in a smart way this offseason for the first time in, I don't know, a long time.
Can I use your Haaland reference to detour for a second to talk about something else that happened today?
Please do.
The news that Kylian Mbappe...
Yes.
Has made, like, I was very worried yesterday when I saw that he was doing the very LeBron James thing of waiting to announce whether or not he was going to stay at PSG or go to Real Madrid. You felt like he was going to have like an official interview and announce that he was taking his talent somewhere.
He's going to have like two hats on the table and then pick up a signing.
A scarf or whatever.
Exactly.
I was shocked.
I'm shocked.
And not shocked all at the same time that he's staying at PSG. And the reason why I bring this up is because of the Haaland situation, which is, you know, it didn't feel like that long ago Real Madrid was going to roll out both Mbappe and Haaland. They were going to figure out some way to fund that, and now they're getting neither of them.
Yeah, it blows my mind. But it would not shock me if we found out at some point that the same argument worked on both players, that you're too young to go to Real Madrid and spend the rest of your career in Madrid. Make it, you know,
it seems
stay
like such
here
a
for
weird
a bit,
argument.
Right, but these players are peaking earlier, right? Or maybe peaking's the wrong word, but they are world beaters at a younger age, right? We've known about Kylian Mbappe, but he's 23 now. He won the World Cup in 2018 with France, right? So 4 years ago. So we knew about him at 19. Same thing with Erling Haaland. We've known about this kid since he was 18 or so, and they've been destroying it. And so I think the argument that was made by PSG and by Manchester City was that just come here for 3 years. Stay here for three years. You'll be 26 if you're Mbappe when your contract is up. Go to Real Madrid then. Erling Haaland, stay here at Manchester City for 3 years. Win a bunch of stuff. Play under Pep Guardiola. Round out your game. You'll be 24 in 3 years.
I buy that in the Erling Haaland scenario. I don't on the Mbappe part.
The Mbappe thing is
because
very interesting.
It's why would you, after doing everything you could possibly do in the top French league, why would you continue to bum around in that league when you have the opportunity? You've spent so many years in that league. Why would you go... Why would you stay when you could go play in a better league, your dream league? I have a feeling, and they're already starting to bicker about the amount of money and everything.
Yep.
And I don't think it's just purely a cash deal. I think there's something else they've promised him.
It appears as though they've promised him some say in who the head coach is, some say in who the sporting director is, and some say in future signings.
All right, so essentially he's running the team.
The LeBron James comparison.
He is LeBron.
Exactly. He's the LeBron James of PSG now, if he wasn't already.
So, but that then makes me wonder, he must have like a list of people that he wants to bring in to make it his thing, and another list of people he wants to get rid of.
Probably so. It already appears that Pochettino is out. So where he goes next, I have no idea.
Messi? Neymar?
I don't know about those guys. Well, there's the rumor, right, that Messi is coming to Inter Miami for a 35% stake in the team.
Andy predicted that a year ago, by the way.
Good on Andy.
Yes.
Good on Andy. But so it remains to be seen. It will not cease to be hilarious to me that Neymar went to PSG to have a club that is his so he could win the Ballon d'Or. And lo and behold, some 19-year-old French kid named Kylian Mbappe immediately makes it his team. And now Neymar is playing with Messi and with Mbappe. And it's not Neymar's team. It's not Messi's team. It's Mbappe's team. And this made it just all the more clear that that's the case.
There's so much more to uncover about that story because it just seemed, especially once Haaland was going to City, the opportunity to go to Madrid and be the man in his dream club just seems so obvious and clear. So there just has to be, I'm not even sure the promises of getting to make decisions is enough to sell me on how he made that. Did they give him a giant chunk of land in the Kingdom of Qatar or something?
Yeah, right.
And a lot of people have talked about the fact that the reason why the ownership of PSG would do this is all tied to the fact that the World Cup is in Qatar. Mm-hmm. All of their sports washing is going on. It's peak sports washing season later this year, and they really needed to keep PSG as this kind of crown jewel of a club, and they're really worried about it fading. I don't know how you fade when you've got Messi and Neymar still on your team.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt all your Bundesliga.
There are so many different tangents to take with that story, though, because it really is a shifting of the balance of power for the international transfer market, right? Mm-hmm. It used to be that the pinnacle was Barcelona, was Real Madrid, you know, Manchester United to a certain extent, but like these several super clubs, and now it's the nation state run clubs. It's these oil nation backed clubs like Manchester City and PSG who signed the biggest and best players. And so it really is a changing of the guard in that way. But there you go.
All right. So I'm sorry. I interrupted your Bundesliga chit-chat. Anything else about Germany that we need to know?
Right now, the DFB Pokal final is RB Leipzig and Freiburg, and it is in extra time.
Is that their version of the League Cup? The Carabao Cup, essentially?
It is their FA Cup, I would say. Right. And so Freiburg and RB Leipzig are in extra time right now. It's 1-1. Leipzig's been down at down to 10 men for like 45 to 50 minutes.
That's my team. I should know that.
It is, yeah. Tyler Adams of U.S. men's national team.
I've heard of him.
Fame, yes. On the roster that we just discussed in the last segment, he came on in the 99th minute for RB Leipzig, so I'm going to continue to follow that. But no, it's a big time, and this is a big offseason for the Bundesliga in a lot of ways. One, because of what Borussia Dortmund is trying to do to revitalize that club. They're going to bring in Edin Terzic, who was the manager at the end of last season, who had previously been a ball boy, been a fan of the club since he was a kid, that sort of thing. He's only 39 years old, so this will be his second stint in charge of Borussia Dortmund. But this is a club that's trying to figure out what exactly their identity is, because they've been trying to recreate the Klopp days ever since Klopp left. So we're going on almost like 10 years of them trying to figure out, how do we actually replace Jurgen Klopp and the identity that he gave this team? And so they're working on that. Meanwhile, it appears as though Robert Lewandowski really wants to leave Bayern Munich.
Am I correct in saying that Dortmund failed to win anything while Haaland was their striker?
Yeah.
Did they ever win anything?
No, they had Haaland and Jadon Sancho and didn't win anything.
That's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. It's a massive failure of a team that kind of, you know, is the model of that youth kind of thing, where it's like, okay, we're going to find the next great players. And right now, Jude Bellingham, he's going to be an absolute rock star. He's 18, starting in the midfield for Borussia Dortmund. I bet he's on the World Cup roster for England. He's going to be just an absolute star in the world of soccer, and is playing there right now, and they're probably not going to win anything with him either.
Well, tomorrow, if English football and Bundesliga bore you to tears and you love yourself some Italian soccer, big games tomorrow as AC Milan is... Milan is facing off at Sassuolo.
Yes.
And Inter is facing off against Sampdoria, and the results of those two games will determine who wins the Italian Serie A, as Milan is 2 points ahead of Inter at this point.
All AC Milan needs is a draw, because in Italy, it's not goal differential, it's head-to-head record. And so AC Milan has the head-to-head advantage over Inter Milan, so all they need is a point.
I've always wondered if I preferred that as a tiebreaker. I do. Do you?
I do.
Because
I care way more about how they played against one another than how badly you beat Salina Terna in August.
But you then run the problem of a head-to-head matchups being subject to injuries or call-ups or something. Maybe not call-ups, because they don't play during those windows.
Right.
So, you know, you play two games, and in one of those games you're missing three of your best players, where goal differentials may be a better measure over the course of a season.
It's true, but it just feels like it's the... If you are trying to split hairs between the two best teams in the country, especially two teams that are in the same city, I love that.
That's true.
I love that. It just puts so much more emphasis on those matchups during the year. And sure, there are going to be different factors that play into it and whatnot, but I care way more about what AC Milan did when they played Inter Milan than I do against how badly one of them beat Venezia and Tanner Tessman.
Oh, man. Why'd you have to throw Tanner Tessman under
there? Tessman caught astray. Gianluca Busio.
That's so cruel.
I know. poor Venezia.
They tried really, really hard this year, man.
They did.
And for a while, it looked like they were going to stay up.
I was hoping. My fingers were crossed for them.
I still want to go to a game there.
Heck yeah. Heck yeah.
Let's blow off the Austin U.S. game and go to
Venice instead. Also, I know you're a kit guy. Venezia
yes.
has some sweet kits.
I got to tell you, I was at an indoor facility getting ready to play a game, and I was getting ready to walk on. I looked over, and there was a dude on the other team wearing one of the Venezia kits. And I ran over to him, and I'm like, dude, this is so weird. Where did you get that? And he goes, I have a friend in Europe that found one and got one, and it's so clean. It's such a cool look. I was extremely jealous. All right, sorry. That was
you were distracted for
was,
the entire game. Then.
Yeah. I purposely did not tackle him. Because he had such a cool shirt.
Kit respect, bro.
That's total kit respect. All right. Well, thank you for all that European soccer updating, Tyler. Good stuff. When we come back, it was an epic announcement everybody's been waiting for. Equal pay. Anybody? Next here on the Kick Around.
There you go.
Welcome back to the Kick Around. If you haven't seen it, today was the final for the women's Champions League between Barcelona and Lyon. And am I incorrect to saying that Barcelona's women's team is like undefeated in?
Yeah, they won undefeated in the in their domestic season.
They were having a tremendous. Well, they ended up losing to Lyon today, 3-1 in the women's Champions League final. And if you haven't seen it, we tweeted it out at the Kick Around. The opening goal of the game came from Amandine Henry, the French blonde midfielder. So if you ever hear me end the show with the phrase, get stuck in and win your 50s, this is the textbook example of what that phrase means. She goes in, slide tackles a ball away. The Barcelona player flips over her. And while everybody else is waiting for a whistle, but there didn't need to be one because it was as clean a tackle as you could possibly get. It is classic textbook getting stuck in and winning a 50. She gets up, pushes the ball back to the middle with a couple of sweet touches, and proceeds to hit the worldie of all worldies. What, 36 yards out?
Yeah.
Slightly out of middle, upper, far corner. Absolutely crushes it, and it is a sequence. It's an entire play that any player of this sport would die for.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
The
it's
kind
so
of play
good.
That everybody, you know, when you think about, okay, you're daydreaming about your next game, you think, if I could make that play. Like, that's the play everyone wants to make in their mind.
If right? I had made a play like that, I would just hang it up right yeah. there. I would end it just
done.
That way. Fantastic. Go look at that video. It's over on Twitter at The Kick Around, or just do a search for it. It's good stuff. Now, related to that, the big news this week, after much consternation, controversy, complaining, pointing fingers back and forth at each other, U.S. Soccer announced that an agreement between themselves, the women's player union or group, and the men have all decided that equal pay is here. Now, what this essentially means is that... Because most of the components of what they were arguing over had long been agreed to in many ways, shapes, and forms. They just were trying to figure out the minutiae of it, meaning that if we're going to play a game, everybody, if we're playing a friendly, the women should get paid this much for participating in the game, and the men should make the exact same, vice versa. But the real surprising aspect of this announcement for me, Tyler, and maybe this is a generational thing, I don't know, I'm going to admit it up front, is I'm extremely confused and surprised, frankly, that really what this came down to was the agreement that the pooling of the FIFA World Cup prize money, because it is so diametrically different between the men and the women, would be all put into a pool. And then once the federation took out its minute percentage, the whatever was left over would be split 50-50 between the men and the women.
That's interesting.
I'm really shocked by that.
Because the women, while having much more success, the prize money is lower in the Women's World Cup than it is for the men's.
Let me show you how crazy that number is.
Okay.
The U.S. men's national team will make more money for just playing in the World Cup this winter.
Yeah.
Than the women could potentially make if they won the next Women's World Cup. That's how completely off the charts different those two amounts of money are.
For everyone listening, that's a FIFA thing.
That's a
not yes. a U.S. soccer thing.
Yes, and that was one of the maddening aspects that I was still very frustrated by, because, look, I'm fine with equal pay as a ideal, but I'm also pragmatic enough to understand that these are two different businesses, and the analogy I kept trying to make for people is, I know you think this is the same thing, and if we all agree this is the same thing and everybody's playing the same game, a TV anchor at an ABC affiliate in Dallas is going to make way more money than the ABC affiliate in Waco. They're doing the same thing. They're talking about the same thing. But because they're different markets, there's the money is different. That's just the reality. And so I got frustrated when people would make the argument that it was unfair that the women weren't making as much money for the World Cup, Women's World Cup, but the dollars aren't there yet. Someday they may be. I mean, there's like 80,000 people at this Champions League final today,
right, right.
between Barcelona and Lyon.
Barcelona sells out the Camp Nou,
yes.
you know, their men's stadium, where the men had traditionally played. They sell out all their women's games there now, too. And so, like, that's an amazing thing to see and an amazing step for women's soccer. But globally, the game for women just isn't,
all right, so
isn't
help,
on that level.
So help me out here, because you're a young.
Okay.
I think I consider you to be a young.
Oh, I feel less like a young.
Okay, well.
No, but go ahead.
But
I'm here.
Hearing both sides of this, I heard Walker Zimmerman talk about this. I've heard people from the women's side talk about this. That because the men stand, I mean, the reality is let's just make up a fake number. Let's say the men go to the World Cup and there's $100 million that they may make, right? Mm-hmm. Well, once the federation, by the way, the federation like, this is a whole other component of this. Like, the Federation is only getting, like, 10% of those winnings, which is mm-hmm. off the charts tiny compared to so many of these other federations.
Right.
Which all claim equal pay, but really aren't. They're just paying out percent equal percentages. Mm-hmm. It's a weird deal anyway. Like,
right,
Sweden
right.
and Finland and all these so forth progressive countries. And so it just seems weird to me. We're living in a world... And I just have a feeling this is going to blow up in their face at some point when somebody goes, hey, we just won $100 million. Oh, wait a second. We only ended up with $50 million because we had to give half of it to the guys who had absolutely nothing to do with us playing in this tournament.
But so wouldn't the women also be the beneficiaries of men's prize monies?
Yes.
For this year in Qatar?
Yes. And the very, very smart guy, Stephen Bank, who is a professor of finance and is also a huge soccer fan, you should follow his Twitter account. He made the very, very astute observation. He wondered if this deal would have gotten done had the U.S. men failed to qualify for Qatar.
Interesting.
Because what the women know is they are already in for a cut of a base number that the men are going to get for just going to Qatar. And they had absolutely nothing to do with it. And in all fairness, apparently the men are, at least in a majority vote, fine with that.
Interesting. So when we tell the story, or when someone asks you, why are the U.S. women so good while the U.S. men aren't there at the same stature in their respective sports against their respective competitions. What's your answer?
Well, the answer is just talking about the history of each of those sports and
right.
that the men are a byproduct of being 100 years behind all the other countries. And because the United States is very progressive in its women's sports, are essentially, I don't know, 25 years ahead of everybody else on the planet.
Yeah. You wonder if this is another move that's similar, right? Because so one of the things that I see when I see Barcelona, their women's team, filling up a gigantic stadium, and then I look at an NWSL game here in the United States, I think, man, it's not going to take long for Spain, for France, for Italy, some of these other countries that are really, really digging in and supporting the women's game on a level that the U.S., at least within their domestic leagues, is not. The U.S. turns out to support the U.S. women's team, but if you watch some of these NWSL games, you're not seeing the same level of attendance. And so my thought was that this is a proactive move to ensure that the U.S. continues to get that next generation of talent, that next generation of women interested in playing the game to help keep up a little bit with the Spains, the Frances, the Germanys that are selling out women's games for their domestic leagues.
That's probably a really fair way of considering it and thinking about it. I just wonder if a deal like this holds long term for either side, because I just find it really, really hard to believe. And again, I'm willing to admit that maybe this is just a generational difference, that maybe in Gen Z, those guys really so strongly universally believe in full equality that they're willing to give up the business dollar, the reality of those dollars, for as long as the women and men's prize money continues to be so desperate between the two.
I don't have a great concept for how much of Christian Pulisic's yearly earnings come from the U.S. versus
not very much.
From Puma versus from Chelsea versus from Gatorade. You know what I mean? Like, Is it the equivalent of a Gatorade sponsorship to Christian Pulisic, the amount of money that he's giving up in this?
Probably not.
Now, he's obviously maybe an outlier for the U.S. men, but what about Miles Robinson, who still plays in MLS? What about Walker Zimmerman? Those guys are
making probably $1 million a year in Major League Soccer. Maybe they're making a few hundred thousand in sponsorship. They're not crazy athlete pays. Payments, but that really caught me off guard that they were willing to make that type of agreement. And by the way, don't fail to recognize that the deal that they put together minus parental leave time is the most equitable deal of any country in the world when it comes to the sport of soccer. All these other countries, Scandinavian countries and European countries that have talked about equal pay are not even close, apparently, to how equitable the deal is between the U.S. men's and women's team that they announced earlier.
It's a fascinating legacy that this generation of U.S. women's players will leave. Not just the success that they've had, that a Megan Rapinoe has had on the field, or, you know, Alex Morgan and that sort of thing, but it'll be really interesting to see how this reverberates kind of throughout the next few generations of women's players.
Yeah, there's lots of information about it. We tweeted a lot of links earlier this week to really good, well thought out kind of analysis of the deals. The Stephen Bank guy in particular, you should absolutely go read. He's been one of Bo Durr has written some really good articles for The Guardian and other places. He's been one of the leading, most kind of like level headed guys about this, really trying not to take one side or the other. So lots of really, really good analysis. I encourage anybody who's interested in understanding the equal pay deal that was announced last week. I just farted on the air. When we come back, we will do our final segment. It's time to talk about the World Cup and its impact on this particular show next year on the Kick Around. We have made it to yet another final segment of another episode of the Kick Around, episode number 296. Andy Swift will be back next week. Tyler, you're welcome to come sit in anytime. You can play the role of Simon the dog next week.
Yeah, I might just, you know, come hang out. Want some pets or something.
Andy will bring you treats like he does Simon.
He can replace me next week. We'll just go around the horn. Then he could be EA and then he could be
Jacob. That's true. Yeah, you could do that. All right. By the way, we were talking about the wonderfully warm story of Sunderland winning their playoff game and getting promoted back into the championship. The one item about that that I failed to mention is the owner slash chairman is this Kirill Dreyfus, Louis Dreyfus. He's 23 years old.
What?
And he's part of the Louis Dreyfus fortune.
Oh.
Which is related to Julia Louis-Dreyfus of Seinfeld fame, Elaine. Yep. You know, she comes from like billions of dollars.
Yeah, love
right.
her.
Well, her father is the brother, I suppose, of this guy's father who passed away a few years ago, who used to run Adidas and other things. And he is a billionaire unto himself. He's like 23 years old. And he's the kid that came in and anointed himself owner slash chairman of Sunderland.
Oh.
And he's very preppy looking and all of that. He's French, and he got Sunderland promoted.
Looks like he goes to SMU or something.
Yes.
Okay.
And so if you want to enjoy kind of the side oddity of Sunderland's promotion today is the fact that it's somehow tied to Seinfeld, the TV show.
Oh,
so
my gosh.
That is true. All right. The final thing I wanted to talk about today, because it is nigh upon us, just in a mere few months, we are going to enjoy our next World Cup. And it continues to surprise me when I run into people who even know the sport,
yeah,
who have forgotten or were unaware that the World Cup isn't happening in the summer. It's happening starting the week of Thanksgiving, Monday the 21st.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
And so starting Monday the 21st all the way through Friday, December the 2nd, every day for two solid weeks, we will have, yes, including Thanksgiving Day.
Mm-hmm.
We will have four games a day of group stage play.
I love that so much. I'm so excited.
The World Cup is so great.
Yes. It's weird it's not in the summer, though.
It is.
It's so weird.
Yeah, and there's a casualty to that I'll get into in a second. Since we last talked about this, the schedule has all been figured out. And one of the things I think we've mentioned, I didn't realize this until I was digging into it, the country of Qatar is actually smaller than the DFW area. The entire country.
Blows my mind.
Okay. So everybody's heard the stories of slave labor and importing all these guys under indentured servitude to build these stadiums, and they're dying and all this stuff. Yes, they built like seven stadiums, all within a 35-mile radius. The most northern one is essentially Frisco. The other one is out like in Pleasant Grove, and there's a bunch kind of in the main downtown Dallas slash Preston Hollow slash Oak Cliff slash Irving kind of region, if you want to think about it in relation to our But here's the weird part of it. Because of this, a typical element of the World Cup, which is the kind of operations of between game travel, because in so many countries they have to figure out where they're going to get from where they're staged to where they're going to play next. They don't have to do that this
year. Not that difficult.
That FIFA was able to reschedule the games. So the games will be played in four time slots. They'll be played at 4 a.m. Dallas time, 7 a.m. Dallas time, 10 a.m. Dallas time, and 1 p.m. So what they've done is they've looked at the game, the two teams in a game, and said, which is the most, what is the best broadcast time for those two countries? And so for the United States, all four of their group stage games are at 1 p.m.
Unbelievable. That's such a smart decision.
Yes. Very, very good. So that has worked out in everybody's favor and is a big component of this. But so I have a friend that we've known, my wife and I have known for a long time. He and his wife and his family have traveled to every World Cup dating back to like the mid-2000s. They went to Germany. They went to South Africa. They went to Brazil. They went to Russia. They are going to Qatar. So they spent all this time and money building these stadiums, but apparently they forgot to build enough hotel rooms. So this is a true story that people who are getting tickets to go to Qatar, which is like an additional million people in the city of Doha every day, do not have anywhere near enough hotel rooms. And so everybody is scrambling to figure out where they're going to stay. And it has gotten to the point where they're talking about bringing in cruise ships to house people in cruise ships. The other most popular choice is to literally stay in an adjacent country and fly in and out every day. So stay in, what's the Arab Emirates city? Not Doha.
Dubai?
Dubai, thank you. Stay in Dubai and fly in because it's like a 45-minute flight. But the newest one, and the one that is the craziest, is that they're talking about building these tent cities, these like elaborate tent cities out in the desert, which makes you immediately think of the Fire Festival.
It
looks just like the Fire Festival.
It looks like
pamphlet.
Soccer Fire Festival with just cheese sandwiches and lettuce
and tents in the desert.
Amazing
that they somehow, and I'm sure at some point somebody's going to explain how they thought and figured out how they build all the stadiums and didn't build enough hotel rooms. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Some of the estimates of how short they are on hotel rooms is shocking. Like hundreds of thousands of hotel rooms short.
Because
they're expecting like 1.2 million visitors. Again, which is fine if it's the entire country of Germany or the country of South Africa. But for a place that is roughly the size of Dallas-Fort Worth to all of a sudden inject 1.2 million more people, that's insane.
But how did you go? I mean, because I have no idea what Qatar's going to do with seven soccer stadiums once the World Cup's over. I mean, I guess they'll play soccer in them, do something, but they're so elaborate and big. It's not like the Qatari Top League is, you know, pulling in that kind of audience.
No.
So you would think, like, did they say, well, we don't want to build all these hotels because we'd never have any use for them? Or I don't know. It doesn't make any sense to me. It's so weird.
Did someone just forget?
So as you're preparing yourself for the World Cup to start the week of Thanksgiving, be prepared for the wheels-off nature of how the actual tournament goes down because of hearing stories about fan horror stories of getting in and out of the country and where they're staying and all that stuff. It's a whole side thing that is pretty crazy. Now, as it relates to this particular show, if you've been listening for any length of time, you know that the origins of the Kick Around started with two World Cups ago when Andy and I did a weekly, nightly wrap-up show. Tyler was one of the hardcore listeners, used to write us little letters in the mail and you know,
postcards.
Dear Kick Around, my name is Tyler. I'm in middle school.
I too like the soccer.
I like the soccer. Could you please tell me more about Landon Donovan? It was very cute back in the day.
He wasn't on that roster though, was he?
No.
That's why we need to know more about him.
And so we've done the last two World Cups as a nightly wrap-up show here on The Ticket. Well, here's the problem. The casualty of the tournament being played in November and December is that FIFA has now also scheduled the sport's most important once every 4 years tournament right smack dab in the meat of the American sports calendar. The NFL, college football, hockey, basketball are back at that point. And The Ticket has all sorts of programming obligations. Monday Night Football, Thursday Night Football, intentional grounding on Wednesdays.
The Dallas Stars.
So in talking with Jeff Catlin, the program director, the hard reality is it's going to be almost impossible for The Ticket to, you know, host the nightly kick around show. So what you, the good P1, should know is we are on it. We are working diligently and talking to syndicators and other people to help us put together a nightly wrap-up show that'll probably end up coming in the form of podcasting, which if you had told me that was the resolve 4 years ago, I would have poo-pooed that idea because I was a snob about it. But it seems much more acceptable in 2022. So I do believe let me say it this way. Over my dead body, will there not be a World Cup kick-around daily wrap-up show? There will be. In some shape, form, or fashion.
Yes.
And I think, you know, we're talking about actually streaming it live, possibly with video. We're looking at all sorts of creative solutions for this because that is one of the weird byproducts. And I do think it's one of the things that a lot of people aren't talking about is what's going to happen in this country when the World Cup is going on, literally in the most important part of an NFL season.
Yeah.
Our Twitch and YouTube and streaming pages have been very useful so far during the Mavericks playoff run.
Thank you, Jacob. I appreciate that. We are really trying to figure out the best ways to manage through all of that stuff.
Right.
But I do wonder how much is the World Cup going to fall off the kind of collective mainstream American radar, because typically it happens when there's not a lot going on in this country.
That's
and everybody
true.
Becomes super excited about the tournament.
However, it happening the week of Thanksgiving, though, when fewer people are working, like a Monday at 1 p.m.?
But that's just 1 week of 4 weeks of
We only might get three games.
Somebody pointed out to me that the big game between the U.S. and England is happening on Black Friday.
Heck yeah.
Which there really wasn't anything going on, but now the rumor is the NFL is going to schedule a big Black Friday game that day on Amazon, to stream on Amazon that day.
That
so, and now, it probably won't happen at 2 p.m. in the afternoon. I doubt. I would assume it'd be a night thing. But again, that's just going to pull focus away from what typically is an event that gets a ton of attraction and focus.
I'm less concerned about this than you, I think.
Really?
Yeah. I don't think that there's anything that's going to detract from a 1 p.m. Friday, Black Friday game between the USA and England.
I'm not worried about that specific because that's going to be huge.
Overall attention on the tournament?
Yes. I'm talking about the media collective ability to pay attention and spend their inventory time, their time focusing on the World Cup that they normally have literally infinite amount of in July and June, right in the middle of the most critical part of literally both the college football season and the NFL season.
But couldn't you also see a world where now the World Cup is going to be mentioned right alongside NFL games and more people just being engaged in a sports way?
Based on talking to people that are making these programming decisions,
yeah,
they can't figure out how they allocate promotional time, advertising time, programming time, because that's all time saved up for promoting their NFL programming, their college football program.
How much promotion does the NFL need? My God, it's already like the number one thing that ever happens on television.
But here's the deal.
You
need to be able to promote that you have it, right?
Yeah.
So when you think about things that aren't necessarily the networks, when you're talking about people that run this stuff of like an affiliate like the Ticket does, the Ticket needs to promote the fact that they have Monday Night Football and Thursday Night Football. So that's where all that inventory goes to.
So is this going to end up with Fox putting, you know, FS2?
No, I think Fox has figured out because of the time the games are on, the games will be on FS1 and Big Boy and Fox.
Big Daddy Fox?
Yeah, yeah.
Man. Well, this will be interesting.
I just wanted to give everybody an update. There will be a World Cup kick around. Don't worry. It just may not be in the typical form and fashion. And when we get back to the normal structure in 2026, when it's here in the United States... By the way, stadium announcements coming in June, they officially said. I do think there is a very good chance the Death Star gets the final. Oh. I'm feeling better and better about it all the time.
Universal fight.
Wouldn't that be great?
Mm-hmm.
That would be awesome. Tyler, thank you so much for sitting in. You're so good.
Thanks for having me.
You on the show. Come on anytime. Love it, love it, love it. Jacob, thank you for your tickers. Sam, thanks for producing. EA, thanks for managing the board and all the hassles it gave you. All right, P1, send Lars your love and hugs and affection. We love you, Lars. Get better soon. P1s, we love and adore you. Go on out, get stuck in, and win your 50s.